And welcome to Pure Opelka on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT. It's Mike with you Saturday night in a recorded show, so you can't call. I'm sorry. It is a delayed show because of the college basketball action going on, and we hope Temple came out on top. Temple won last night, so they get to play again today. I was watching basketball this afternoon and also keeping my eyes on the standoff in Trenton, New Jersey, with the guy who reportedly killed three people earlier today that forced the cancellation of a St. Patrick's Day parade, had businesses locked down in Bucks County. I hope they have finally resolved that and they've got this guy in custody. Not a good dude, based on everything we were seeing. But kudos to Wisconsin for the overtime win over Purdue. I was watching some college basketball. That was fun. I like college basketball better than the pros. Just seems like it's a more pure form of the sport. We have talked about a lot of things today. It was a busy week, very, very busy week, that culminated in the ruling that forced Fannie Willis to make a decision. Was she going to keep herself on the case in Fulton County going after Donald Trump, or was she going to force her lover to quit? I was very interested in that. We're going to talk to Wendy Patrick about that here in just a second, waiting for her to ring in. But in case you didn't know, this is not a new topic to Fannie Willis. In 2020, she was given a speech and she was talking about a similar situation, this kind of inappropriate behavior. And she said this:
any public officer shall be by himself, his deputy, or his agent, or other in person employed by him, be guilty of extortion in receiving other and greater fees than by law are allowed him, shall be guilty of a misdemeanor, and repeat this part for me, and shall be dismissed from office. Not maybe, shall be dismissed from office.
Huh, funny how that worked out, right? Yeah, maybe, shall be dismissed from office. Jonathan Turley, who I think has a cot at Fox News, was talking about this after the ruling came out yesterday afternoon, and had this to say.
Many of us believe that neither she nor Wade were honest on the stand. Many people have suggested that there might have been false statements given on the stand.
You think?
There's certainly evidence suggests that Wade may have given false statements to a prior court in the divorce proceedings. All of that is a damning record that I think makes it practically impossible to go forward. She would have to continue to prosecute people who are accused of the same conduct that she is currently being accused of. And keep in mind, Wade is not out of this. He's been accused of false statements, and one of those allegations I think is very compelling. He could be facing proceedings on the state level or the bar level. She will be a witness as those things unfold.
This is very interesting to me that there is so much more to this, so many more investigations yet to unfold in this case. But I want to talk about the ruling that came out Friday morning that gave Fannie Willis the choice. Are you going to step down, or are you going to force someone else to step down? And that's why I reached out to our friend, prosecutor, author, all-around great person, Wendy Patrick is her name. If you've been a listener of mine in the past, you know Wendy. We've had her on many, many times talking about all kinds of things. And I said, Wendy, I need to talk to you about the Fannie Willis thing. And I also have a couple other crazy stories I want to get to. And I'm very happy she's here. We haven't had her on in a couple of weeks. We missed you like a front tooth. Welcome back, Wendy Patrick.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to join you. You and I have both just been very busy.
Yes, yes, very busy. Well, the world is crazy. The world's on fire, so there's a lot to talk about. Obviously, the biggest story in the legal world, I think for most of us in the politics and legal world, was the resolution of the attempt to get Fannie Willis thrown off the Trump case in Fulton County. And we got that decision on Friday. But this turned out to be kind of a really interesting twist. Some people are saying that Judge McAfee had Solomon-like wisdom, and some people are calling him other words that we can't say on the radio. What do you think of this decision, Wendy?
Well, you know, I'm not surprised at the decision. Basically, it was legally what he felt he could and couldn't do. You know, to have an actual conflict of interest, most of the time you'd need some sort of evidence that a relationship, an interest, has jeopardized the integrity of the case, or is likely to jeopardize the integrity of the case. The romantic involvement of two prosecutors on the same side of a case isn't exactly the kind of thing, if it happens once they were both hired, that would be an issue. What I think complicated this case is the allegations, at least, that Ms. Willis hired Nathan Wade after they were involved. And that was the reason that they had that hearing, which was really awkward, that you and I both watched, where Ms. Willis took the stand. But the decision here is basically he gave her, you know, the choice. You can, you know, pass up the case to another prosecutor's office up for reassignment, or Nathan's got to go. And Nathan Wade resigned from his post as special prosecutor, which basically allows Fani Willis to move forward. I won't say on schedule, because there's nothing about keeping a schedule that was involved here. I mean, it's a bit of a delay, just like all the rest of Donald Trump's cases. He would have been hard pressed. The judge, Scott McAfee, would be hard pressed to really point to something that proved that she or her office would be unable to continue. I understand that's what the defense wanted, but he made clear in his ruling he didn't really have that nugget to point to.
Yeah, there wasn't that one bit of hard evidence, incontrovertible evidence that he could point to. So he made the decision, Ms. Willis's decision, which I thought was fascinating. And there are some people who are saying, Wendy, that the judge actually may have done this based on his possible political future, because he's facing re-election. And up until last week, he didn't have anyone running against him. And then suddenly there's a primary challenge to his re-election. And this was dancing on a high wire, trying to keep everybody happy. And, you know, based on that thinking, I actually think he did a really interesting thing here and may have saved his own skin, kept everybody happy, or made everybody unhappy at the same time. And that may be a win-win-win for all parties involved.
Well, you know, along those lines, Mike, I also found it curious that there was a little bit of something for everybody in his decision.
Yeah.
So on the one hand, he did find that there wasn't this conflict that would be disqualifying. On the other, remember, he said that his ruling is by no means an indication, this is his own language, condones this tremendous lapse in judgment. And listen to this, Mike, or the unprofessional manner of the district attorney's testimony during the evidentiary hearing. So, I mean, you don't often see judges weighing in on the demeanor of witnesses like in a hearing like this. Because you remember what Ms. Willis said on the stand? She said, I'm not the one on trial, when she was kind of, you know, going at it with during cross-examination. But he also talked about, the issue of were there financial issues in mind. And what he basically said is, you know, the record made at the evidentiary hearing established that the DA's prosecution is encumbered by an appearance of impropriety. But he also basically said regarding the financial arrangement that created an incentive to prolong the case, there's no indication the DA was interested in delaying anything. So he made a lot of observations that I know both sides are seizing upon. But it's interesting that you mentioned the race, the judicial race, because it would be hard. Somebody would be hard pressed to really say, well, you know, he only favored one side of this, because there's just a lot of statements in his decision that you can see how they're already being spun by both sides.
Yeah, everybody's trying to find their interpretation to benefit right. their case in this. And that is how it works. And we got to deal with it. Wendy, let's talk about a couple of other strange cases. You got a minute?
Oh, yeah.
All right. I have to talk about the woman who faces a serious felony charge. Nebraska woman went in and bought a card to get gas, like a gift card to get gas at a local store that sells, you know, convenience store with gas. And when she swiped the card at the pump, I guess she double swiped it and somehow realized the gas was not being charged to her, that the card was not being debited. And she didn't go in and tell him, hey, There's something wrong out here. I'm getting free gas. No, she got free gas for several months. And she also told her friends, hey, you want free gas? Well, you pay me a few bucks. And it ends up, I guess she took like almost $30,000 in free gas due to this situation. Is this along the lines of a bank putting the wrong check in your account and then you spending it?
You know, it's funny, you may remember you and I talked about a case like that where a woman found an enormous amount of money in her account and thought, well, maybe somebody owes it to me or somebody paid me. Here, you wouldn't even have that excuse. So this was a 45-year-old woman. Why is age important? Because clearly this is somebody that knew better. Yeah, there's no such thing as free gas, and there's really no such thing as free anything unless it's advertised, unless it's some kind of a BOGO or a promotion. And I know that, you know, Krispy Kreme gave away one free donut per customer the other day. And, you know, those kinds of things are very heavily publicized. Gas is not ever going to be free. But not only, as you mentioned, did this 45-year-old rack up a cost of $28,000. You think about how many times she had to go and fill up her tank, but she capitalized on it. And I mean that quite literally, as she had some other, you know, you give me this and I'll give you a discount on the gas. I'll get it with this card. And, you know, obviously it wasn't going to last forever. She had to have known she was going to be found out. And she was. So there were multiple occasions that this happened. The card was used 510 times reportedly. And that means 7,400 gallons of gas pumped for free. Now she is free on bond. She has got a court hearing April 11th, and we will find out when the hammer falls what the sanction is going to be.
Yeah, I think this is amazing. I understand if you get gas and you say, hey, I got gas free, and maybe that's an innocent thing, and then maybe the store would have let that go. But to turn it into an enterprise where you are renting out
capitalism.
The car. Yeah. Well, it's kind of illegal capitalism. She was
totally
stealing from somebody. This will be a fun one to watch. Now, speaking of stealing, this is nothing in terms of comparison to the size of the crime. But there is a guy who lost his job as a principal because he kept taking too much coffee at the store. So he'd go to a similar store and he'd pay for a medium-sized coffee cup, but he was filling it up to the large-sized coffee cup. How do you lose your whole job for taking a few extra ounces of coffee?
Right. So we're moving from filling your tank to overfilling your cup. And apparently, this high school principal did it at least seven times at convenience stores. Now, what I would like to know when I read this is, what does it even mean to overfill your cup? I mean, most of us don't fill it all the way to the top because then we won't spill it as we drive. But I'm assuming perhaps this could have been something on an honor system. You know, all the cups are the same size. You can only put so many things in there. You know, it kind of reminds me of those people I see walking around the 7-Eleven. They fill up their cup. They're drinking it as they browse up. And then they go back. They refill it again. A lot of people do that. But, I mean, if you are in a culture or a situation or in a job or in a position where this is zero tolerance policy for dishonesty and something is on the borderline, maybe that was part of the issue here. And, you know, it's one of those cases where it had to do with a button that you press for what you want, but then you only pay for something different. So I would say it's a little different than kind of an accidental overfill if you're really paying for a medium but serving yourself a large. Here's the argument I would make if I had to as to why something that might seem menial like this would be significant. If somebody is willing to cut corners on something as simple as a cup of coffee, what else are they willing to cut corners on? Is it a paycheck? Is it when you clock in and out of work? You know, that would be the argument one would make that this isn't as, you know, innocent. I mean, it's, you've never done this. It's the kind of thing that we may say, oh, in the grand scheme of things. But on the other hand, most of us don't know people that would do this once.
Yeah, I'm miffed at the severity of the punishment. Now, this was in Japan. The guy not only lost his job, he lost his pension, too. They said you're not only going to lose the principal gig, but you're not going to qualify for the pension because you're a criminal. And it's seven cups of coffee, people. Is your pension.
And that's why you just hit the nail right on the head. The punishment must fit the crime in all cases. It can't be so severe and disproportionate to the poor judgment exercised in a case like this. That would be the argument that his lawyer, see, I played the prosecutor, now I'm playing the defense. If I were his lawyer, and by the way, the prosecutors ultimately chose not to charge the principal for the theft. So you're right, he did suffer the employment sanctions. But his defense team would argue, you know, this guy apologized, he said he was sorry, he was responsible, he did it on the impulse of the moment, I guess seven times. But for whatever reason, you know, to lose a pension, I don't know how many years this guy worked, but you're right. And all cases like that are oftentimes appealed. We know that in legal court here in the States, everything is always appealed, and sometimes disproportionate reactions to some types of crimes or tort actions are reduced. So maybe you and I will watch this one too, because I had the same response when I read the punishment. It's like, wow, yeah, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, I would have sentenced him to work at the store for 7 weeks or 7 days. You know, you
got seven. No coffee for 7 weeks.
Oh.
No coffee. You drink decaf. I understand you're going to get that headache. We all know what it feels like. Yeah. No coffee for a year. How about that?
Oh, that's cruel and unusual punishment.
Wendy,
Patrick.
That'd be worse. You're right.
You are a tough judge. You're a hanging judge. I know that. Her name is Wendy Patrick. She is our go-to on all things legal, and she's great stuff on Twitter, X, at Wendy Patrick, PhD, and also is always writing absolutely gems in Psychology Today. You have a new piece in Psychology Today, latest piece about how do you know when someone's about to break up with you? It's really obvious, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's an interesting article on how do you know whether or not your partner wants to break up with you, because the surprising research, I'm going to leave the listeners hanging. The research will surprise you.
Good.
That'll be my cliffhanger.
Good. Chase it down. Go to Psychology Today. Follow Wendy on Twitter, X. My friend, it's been too long. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Mike.
And there she goes. Important analysis on all things legal, not just the Fannie Willis story, but the crazy legal news that's out there. We try to get to all of it. And speaking of crazy legal news, were you watching the story about Don Lemon and Elon Musk this week? The story that broke after Don Lemon decided he needed to run to the mainstream media and say, I lost my big ticket at Twitter X when Elon Musk got mad at me for an interview. It was a kind of a crazy story because it sounded like Don Lemon, the failed host over at CNN, the guy who, by the way, has to get his entire contract paid out, so he will be getting millions from CNN. There won't be any telethon held or any GoFundMe held for Don Lemon. But he apparently pitched Elon Musk on putting a show that he would host on the Twitter X platform. And Musk was all in. And he even was the first interview. And then it turned ugly as Don Lemon was cut. As Elon Musk said, no, we're not doing this. And Lemon ran to CNN to say, I was fired before I even got a chance to start. And they were terrible to me. Unceremoniously dumped, I think was the phrase he used when he went back and did an interview with his old buddy at CNN, Aaron Burnett. Well, it turns out there's more to the firing. There's more to the non-contract between Twitter X and Don Lemon. Elon Musk canceled the Don Lemon show. Yes, it happened after he sat down with Lemon, but apparently it may have had more to do with Don Lemon's demands. The New York Post is reporting that Don Lemon was demanding a Tesla Cybertruck, a $5 million advance, equity in Twitter X, meaning, you know, a piece, a slice, before Elon Musk dropped him, canned him. You got to believe that Lemon is just so full of himself. And it's amazing that he would make those demands. He wanted $5 million up front, and that was on top of an $8 million salary. And again, plus a piece of ownership in Twitter X, and he apparently wanted the ability to approve any changes to Twitter X policy as it would relate to the news content. At least that's what the New York Post is reporting. They apparently have documents relating to this negotiation. So while Don Lemon is crying in public, he was being a jerk in terms of negotiations. And I'm just saying, I think Elon Musk had the right idea in making sure this didn't go forward. Don Lemon was actually questioning Elon about meeting with Donald Trump. And this may have also been part of the rationale behind Elon Musk telling Don Lemon to take a hike.
You recently met with Donald Trump in Florida. What did you guys talk about?
I was at a breakfast at a friend's place, and Donald Trump came by. That's it.
What did you discuss?
He did most of the talking.
Did he ask you for money?
He didn't.
Are you going to loan him money to help pay his legal bills?
I'm not paying his legal bills in any way, shape, or form.
Did he ask you for a donation?
No.
Are you leaning towards anyone?
No.
You're not leaning towards anyone? Because you've been...
I'm leaning away from Biden.
You're leaning...
I love that he said, I'm leaning away from Biden. But I just think Lemon comes off as a total jerk and a bonehead. But then again, he was a total jerk and a bonehead before. This is not a surprise. This is just Don Lemon. Don Lemon being Don Lemon. I bet the show is not going to go forward. The Don Lemon show is not going to go forward, even with just the opportunity to post on Twitter. Speaking of talk show hosts, the one that we've been keeping an eye on lately, of course, is Bill Maher. He's been saying some things that make you think, hey, he's a reasonable guy. And then you watch him with Nancy Mace, Congresswoman Nancy Mace, and he was asking her about the last Sunday disgusting interview between George Stephanopoulos and Nancy Mace when he tried to rape shame Nancy Mace and question her about her support for Donald Trump. The exchange between Maher and Nancy Mace was fascinating to me. I think this is terrific.
Can I ask you about that? Because I asked before, would you mind talking about it? Because you were much in the news last week about this issue, because you were on George Stephanopoulos' show. Mm-hmm. And he was questioning about the idea that you're supporting Trump, who was found guilty of sexual assault by a jury in New York for the E. Jean Carroll case. And you were a rape victim yourself. And I guess his implication was that being so, that you should not support someone who is convicted of this crime.
Well, number one, to set the stage a little bit, I went on to talk about 2024. When the general election, it's Joe Biden versus Donald Trump. I had my 14-year-old kid with me, my daughter with me that day. It was work. I was there for work. She had no choice. She had to come with me. It was a really uncomfortable conversation afterwards with her on the way to the airport over this. And she knows my story. But number one, Donald Trump wasn't convicted of sexual assault. The $83 million was a defamation suit. It was about defamation. There was a sexual abuse claim, and she got a little bit for that. But the vast majority of it was for defamation, not rape, not sexual assault. So I think there are two
is
types
that
of...
Is that right, Ron?
That is right.
Yeah, that is right. You'd think that the multi-million dollar show you're putting on here would have a little bit of a research pool where people are actually doing research and seeing the true story. Just amazing to me. Absolutely amazing. Embarrassing. Nancy Mace has had a very difficult time since the Stephanopoulos interview, including having death threats and having to have security and police come to her home. It is just... Well, it shows you who the left is and what Bill Maher and his type are going to do. They're going to continue to demonize anybody who supports Donald Trump. Now, there was an interesting discussion on the same show with Congressman Ro Khanna and Nancy Mace and Bill Maher as it relates to the TikTok bill. And we haven't gotten into the TikTok bill. You guys know I'm anti-TikTok. I wish there were no TikTok. And I think it's an embarrassment to America that TikTok is now on 170 million computers or phones in this country, and we knowingly hand all that information over to China. Now, that doesn't mean I'm all in on a bill, this bill, to ban TikTok. It doesn't mean that at all. You know I'm a free speech advocate, but you also know I'm a let's protect America from our enemies advocate. And China's an enemy. And China controls TikTok. And China should not have control of TikTok. And how do you fix that? Well, I don't think this bill is the way to do it. I think this bill could be a danger to not just TikTok, but to Twitter X. And I think the White House and the Biden administration were telling us about that a while ago. I think if we go back, it was like a year ago. Yes, just over a year ago, November, in the White House, Joe Biden talking to the press, and a question came up. It wasn't about TikTok, but it was about social media and who's controlling social media outlets like TikTok, like Twitter.
Mr. President, do you think Elon Musk is a threat to U.S. national security? And should the U.S. and with the tools you have investigate his joint acquisition of...
This is interesting because this reporter's actually focused on Elon Musk. Do you think he's a threat? Never mind that China is sucking all the data out of these people's phones and computers. But let's focus on Elon Musk because he was going to let people tell the truth.
Twitter with foreign governments, which include the Saudis.
Now, why did he laugh? His reaction after the question is to chuckle. But why? Listen to Biden's response.
I think that Elon Musk's cooperation and or technical relationships with other countries is worthy of being looked at.
Yeah. So Joe Biden's saying, well, we should look at his relationship with other countries. So if you pass this bill to force China out, does that mean it is a slippery slope to then start turning your guns on Elon Musk?
Whether or not he is doing anything inappropriate, I'm not suggesting that. I'm suggesting that it's worth being looked at.
It's worth being looked at. This was over almost a year and a half ago. It was November of 2022. I said that Nancy Mason Ro Khanna were both two congresspeople, one Republican, one Democrat. Nancy Mace, the Republican, obviously, and Ro Khanna, the Democrat, were on with Bill Maher, and they were talking about the TikTok issue. And the interesting thing here is Nancy Mace and Ro Khanna, two of the people who voted against the bill that passed with a massive majority in the House. Listen to this exchange.
Donald Trump's against it, AOC's against it, and Marjorie Taylor Greene's against it.
I know what happened.
This is like the ultimate. Explain to me why the people who are lining up against the bill and against getting, you know, saying, no, we can keep TikTok Chinese. What is the common ground there?
Well, the common ground is the First Amendment and free speech. I mean, it shows how out of touch Congress is that of all the issues in the country, the thing we can get done in 3 days is ban TikTok. That is the...
That's what we're doing, right?
That is the issue.
Securing the border?
You know,
yeah.
You've got 72% of Americans who say, let's pass a data privacy law. Let's make sure that our data doesn't go to China. Let's make sure your data isn't taken in an app. By the way, the data is coming from data brokers as well. No, we don't do that. We do something which 31% of Americans want. Ban TikTok. How many people in Congress actually have even talked to someone who's on TikTok? 170 million folks. There are chemistry teachers on there. There are people who are engaged in political speech. And I am a strong believer in the First Amendment. And it is just out of touch, frankly, of what the Congress has done.
And you've been a consistent First Amendment person.
Now, Nancy Mace is doing a little diplomacy here, but she's giving Ro Khanna, the guy who just spoke, some props for his stance on this. I'm anti-TikTok because I'm anti-China. But I'm concerned that this bill will open up the ability for the government to sit on free speech in other social media outlets. Donald Trump says it's going to make Facebook stronger. Why couldn't we just do what Ro Khanna said and make a bill that would just make it illegal to sell our data? Because there's too many people selling our data and getting very wealthy off of it. But let's hear what else Nancy Mace has to say.
Even when the FBI and federal agencies were telling social media companies to clamp down and censor stories on Twitter and stuff, you were there defending the First Amendment. It's a First Amendment issue. I think it's potentially a Fifth Amendment issue. It's not the government's role to ban apps from the App Store.
It's also a fifth,
or ban websites.
It's also a fifth column issue. Now, I'm not saying I'm not. I think I'm with you guys. I'm always a free speech person. Yes. Don't worry.
I got this.
But and most of it, you know, it's easy to do those jokes because most of it is absolutely innocent. But it's also there when they need it not to be. And we saw that after the Israeli war broke out because somehow the kids all wound up on the side of Hamas. So, yes, you keep it there and you keep it innocent and it's mostly just dancing. But when you need it to change people's minds, don't kid yourself. They do have it and they're not acting in our best interest.
Yeah. Bill Maher says they're not acting in our best interest. I agree with Bill Maher. TikTok, China, not acting in our best interest. Not even close to acting in our best interest. This is a tough one. Why don't they scrap it and redo it? Why don't they create a real smart protect data bill? It's because China's lobbying the hell out of people. China's spending a lot of money on K Street in Washington, D.C., and people in Congress elected to protect us are selling us out. It bothers me. I don't want TikTok. I don't want China controlling anything. On top of this, why, if we're going to focus on things China is doing, China has Confucius Institutes and colleges and universities around the country that are melting the minds of young people. China has gangs that have infiltrated this country and are running the illegal marijuana business. If you don't believe me, just put it in the search machine. Put in Chinese gangs illegal marijuana. They have setups in Oklahoma that are running illegal marijuana operations. They are gangs. They come from the gang-heavy area of China. It's happening. And we're not paying attention. And in the first quarter of this year alone, China has had more people cross our southern border than in the previous year. In the first quarter alone, Chinese nationals coming into the country, more than 20,000. That's bigger than the number of last year. Why? Why now? What the heck is going on? We're 234 days away from an election. 234 days away from what may be the most important election in my lifetime. I believe it is. And a lot of the people in Hollywood are saying, if Donald Trump is reelected, we're not going to have a country. If Donald Trump's reelected, I'm going to leave America. No. No, that's really not the way you should be looking at it. Here's my new angle on this. This is my new take on it. In terms of America, if Joe Biden is reelected, if Joe Biden is the next president of the United States, I'm not leaving America, but I do believe America is leaving me. I do believe America is toast. It's done if we get another 4 years of Biden in the White House. And on top of that, here's the other thing we have to think about. On top of that, I don't believe Joe Biden's healthy enough to make it through 4 more years, which means in reality, a vote for Joe Biden is a vote for Kamala Harris. That is the truth. A vote for Joe Biden in 2024 is a vote for Kamala Harris if she's the person on the ticket. I still think there's some squishy turf there. But, you know, that's all going to have to wait pretty much till the convention, since both Biden and Trump crossed the finish line in their primary tests this week. And the rest of the primary, they should just cancel the rest of the primaries, because let's face it, the parties, the major parties in the country have selected their candidates. I know everybody's saying, well, what about the votes of those people? They're worthless. They're meaningless. They're not going to do anything to help people. So I'm just saying, you got to be smart about this, people. Save the money. I know the Republicans need to save the money. But it is a little concerning to me, especially with all of the stuff happening on the southern border and all of the crime that's not being reported, and it's still happening. New York City, they put the National Guard in the subway, and what happened 3 days later? You got a guy getting shot in the head on the subway. It wasn't at 3 o'clock in the morning. It was during a rush hour, crowded subway train, and National Guard couldn't help. The guy had the gun in his backpack. Did they not search the backpacks? No, they don't search the backpacks of everybody. They can't possibly do it. The answer is not the gimmick that the governor employed. The answer is not to put all these National Guard troops on the trains. The answer was what Rudy Giuliani did when he was mayor. He flooded the zone with cops. He put cops on the street. And the cops got it done. More cops making stuff happen. All right, I've got a few more minutes left here on this special Saturday night show. Again, it's pre-recorded, so you can't call in. I wish you could. A couple of things I want to talk about as it relates to not just the election, but the border as well. This story made me crazy. The story that the state of Massachusetts, which has been allowing illegals to get driver's licenses in this country, well, that's now going to have an effect in other states. Unless the states ban illegals with driver's licenses from other states. But Massachusetts, which really doesn't care, it's now becoming a complete sanctuary state, is allowing illegals to have driver's licenses. And they say it's compassionate so they can go to work. So now you're supporting them going to work and driving cars, and we know they're going to utilize those driver's licenses to try and vote. Everybody knows it. This was a report on the Massachusetts driver's licenses and the effect they would have on Florida. I know you're thinking, Florida? Really?
All Massachusetts driver's licenses will remain valid in Florida, despite the state's new law prohibiting recognition of licenses from states that allow undocumented immigrants to legally drive. As of July 1st, some licenses from Connecticut, Delaware, Hawaii, and Vermont have been considered invalid. In Florida, as a result of an immigration law Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed earlier this year. But for Massachusetts, which earlier this month began implementing a new law allowing undocumented immigrants to get driver's licenses, the Florida law won't apply. Bay State licenses have stayed off of Florida's list because Massachusetts issues the same standard driver's license to everyone, regardless of their legal status in the U.S.
Interesting. Massachusetts gives everybody the same driver's license, if they're citizens or if they're here illegally, and therefore Florida can't block them. I hope they fix that pretty quickly, because Massachusetts isn't going to fix it. And speaking of people getting the rights of American citizens, even though they're not here legally, the gun ban for nonviolent illegal immigrants has been found to be unconstitutional. Now, if you're here illegally, I don't think you should be allowed to have the same rights and privileges as American citizens. But this ruling came down on Friday. U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Johnson Coleman said on Friday that a federal prohibition on illegals owning guns is unconstitutional. Can you imagine? A federal prohibition that says if you're here illegally, you're not allowed to have the Second Amendment. The judge says that's unconstitutional. I hope this gets challenged, because I don't think I want a bunch of people here illegally running around with guns. I know some of them are going to be running around with illegal guns anyway, but the people on the left are saying, well, what if they're not violent? Well, they got into the country illegally. They broke the law to get here. And who decides what's violent and what's not violent? I don't like the idea of a bunch of people, millions of people here illegally owning guns and judges saying it's okay. I wish they would all take the same take on illegal immigration that Barack Obama took in 2007. I know I keep playing some of these from the mouths of Dems, but I think they're important to keep sharing with you. Barack Obama in 2007 talking about illegal immigration.
This administration, the Bush administration, has done nothing to control the problem that we have. We've had 5 million undocumented workers come over the borders since George Bush took office. It has become an extraordinary problem. And the reason the American people are concerned is because they are seeing their own economic position slip away.
Interesting that candidate Obama wanted the border tighter and he wanted the laws about hiring illegals to be strengthened. By the way, good news for everybody who listens to this radio station. Our friend Scott Pressler, who's been on this show for more than 4 or 5 years now, I think, has been picked up by the RNC to lead the charge for registering voters, for trying to get people to vote early. We have to bank votes ahead of the election. The Democrats are going to do that. And it's important that we get on that ourselves. All right, I have to get out of here, but I do have some important news coming up next week. General Michael Flynn has a movie coming out, and we might be able to have a special night with General Flynn where we all get to watch the movie together and then ask him some questions. You have to stay tuned for that, plus a couple other surprises up my sleeve. I wish we had a full show tonight. We didn't. We will have more next week, more opportunities in the future. Till next time, follow me on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook and visit PureOpelka.com to find out what I'm up to and the stories that I think are important. Until next week, testudo, my friends. Testudo.